Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with help from Hims. They provide access to personalized treatment so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of home. Fill out an intake form and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Grant Wall, and welcome to the Planet Football Podcast World Cup Daily. Day 20 of World Cup 2018 is done. Brian Strauss and I will be talking about that as part of our podcast, coming to you daily from Russia through July 16th. Just a small request, it would be a huge help if you subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. It helps people find us. In this episode, I'm also joined by Tony Miola, Fox Sports. Onward! Let's bring in Brian Strauss. It is 3:35 a.m. here in Moscow. You had press conferences earlier. I had a Fox show to do, and so that's why we're doing this at 3:35 a.m. Moscow time. But there's lots to talk about. You were at England, Colombia. Lots of drama this evening here at Moscow Spartak Stadium. England wins on penalties. Didn't think I'd say that any time in this tournament.
Yeah, eventful night. I'm completely shattered. So we'll try to power through here. The sun is coming up. It was just an exhausted, like, it was just one of those games where even though you don't step foot on the field, it was just exhausting. It was a long day. It was packed. You know, every square inch of that media center, of that press box, of that stadium was jammed. You know, we were sitting a few rows behind James Rodriguez. You know, people were jostling to try to get photos. There were two or three fights to our left. The game itself was just complete mayhem. And then, of course, you know, it's one of those deals where, you know, you've got half your story written, and then Colombia scores a 93rd-minute equalizer.
Jerry Mina!
Yeah, it's third goal of the tournament. So, and then obviously, you know, I'm sure everyone who's listening to this watched, overtime was hit or miss. I mean, both coaches had structured their teams to get what they wanted out of the 90 minutes. So, you know, once the setups were a bit different, the extra time was, bit disjointed, and off we went to penalties. And yeah, and not only, by the way, I had a John Brooks moment with Jordan Henderson. Like, Jordan, I mean, I said it to Stephen Goff. We were sitting next to each other. It's like absolutely certain Henderson was going to miss. He just didn't look right. But certainly, Pickford hadn't gotten close to any of them. And so I was equally sort of like, I don't know if this guy is going to make a save. And then, of course, he makes a wonderful, spectacular save. And Dyer does the rest, and they win.
You know, we see these percent chance of winning graphics sometimes in in-game apps and stuff these days. I wonder what the percentages of winning were for Colombia when they're leading after three rounds of penalties
against England.
Against England.
This team is just. Again, I covered their game against Panama, and obviously a far different test, but they are just you can't get under their skin, you can't get inside their heads. There was just a lot going on tonight, and I know a lot of people had opinions about Mark Geiger. A lot of people had opinions about Columbia. You know, everyone had a take, but I'm just being there. It was less about shithousery or jackassery or bias or nonsense, and it was just a really, really gritty, intense game, and you just felt it in your bones and in your parts while you were sitting there watching. England didn't create a ton either. You know, I mean, they had a couple chances. There was a header, and I'm so tired, I can't remember who it was. And Colombia didn't do much till the last 7-8 minutes or so, when they started to put some pressure on. England is just you can't knock them off course. I mean, I can't tell you how many writers and British reporters yesterday, have you looked at the bracket? Come on, you've looked at the bracket, right? Like, we've never had a better chance to make a final. And then Gareth Southgate would say something about focusing on Colombia, and then like the next guy would be like, okay, but seriously, you've looked at the bracket, right? You know, like, it's just, come on, man, you tell us about what you think of the bracket. They've stuck with it. They've handled everything so well. Tonight's game was really, really difficult, and Southgate pointed out leading in that this is the youngest team still in the tournament, and they're handling this like veterans who haven't botched things in the past.
You know, it shouldn't be a really new lesson, but this whole idea, the World Cup is a young man's game, really does seem to be true. And this is not the first time we've talked about that. Not the first World Cup we've talked about that. But it's certainly a lesson, I think, that you see from Spain and Germany and elements of Argentina, that sticking with guys too long isn't going to work. And
except for Cavani, man. Although maybe he'll hit a wall. But yeah, no, 100%. I agree 100%.
You know, and so I do want to say Harry Kane now is 4 of 4 on penalties in this tournament, which the more you take, the more people seem to try and get information on your preferences, and he keeps changing things up. He keeps converting. Just a very impressive individual and performance from him in this tournament. He's got 6 goals now, leading the Golden Boot race, I think, by 2 over Cristiano Ronaldo, who is no longer in the tournament. And one of England, Sweden, Croatia, or Russia is going to be in the World Cup final.
That's crazy.
It is.
Yeah.
You know,
how would we power rank the final eight at this point? I guess I still have Brazil and France 1 and 2, and
yeah,
and then maybe Croatia, just based on their route. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and based on how they played in the group stage, I thought they were the best team in the group stage. They were kind of punk against Denmark.
Yeah.
But look, I think England's going to have a grind against Sweden, a Sweden team that people are starting to have a bit more perspective on as, oh, these guys kept the Netherlands out. These guys kept Italy out. They're pretty good.
Southgate had glowing praise for them today. Just said, this is a team, I mean, he used the phrase, this is a team that is always more than the sum of its parts. And of course, the contrast is obvious, right? England has never been more than this. So they are always less than the sum of their parts until maybe so far the group that he has now. And it would be interesting to see if England's can continue to grow into a team like that, because Sweden has no stars. I mean, Sweden is the ultimate in sort of one for all for one sort of workmanlike group. The sort of team perhaps that Southgate is trying to model England after.
Yeah. We have the 8 quarterfinalists now, and I look at Uruguay, France as being a very appealing battle of contrasting styles. I hope that Cavani is healthy, because I think you want teams to be at their, closest to full strength as possible. I look at Brazil-Belgium, and I think that Brazil is the favorite now, along with France, and that Belgium needs to do a pretty hard rethink about their starting lineup for Brazil, just because what happened against Japan, giving up two goals, can't happen against Brazil if you hope to advance. And I just don't think... I don't know. I don't know how much you watched of that Belgium-Japan game. I think we talked about it last night, obviously. It really seems to me like I just don't see Axel Witsel as being maybe the best option there moving forward. And I'd like to see Moussa Dembélé, but I'd also like to see more defending from Belgium.
I forget the order of the games. I'm not going to a quarterfinal. I'm for logistical reasons and travel reasons, you know, we were thinking of going maybe to, I think it was Kazan if Mexico won. But I am not going to a quarterfinal. So my next game actually covering will be the semifinal in St. Petersburg, which will be between the winner of the games we're talking about, Belgium, Brazil, France, and Uruguay. So this is a strange spot now in the tournament, because we've just been going like at an insane pace now for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And now there's the two rest days. And then I guess I'll watch some quarterfinals on TV. And I'll send in topic suggestions for the podcast, please. but I'm tired. So and the sun's coming up, and I got nothing else. I'm a spent force at the moment.
I got one more question for you about Mark Geiger.
Bring it. Yeah, of course. Okay.
The American referee, who I put out a tweet tonight after all of the mayhem in this Colombia-England game.
Did you piss off Uruguay again, Grant?
I did not piss off Uruguay tonight, though I still am getting responses on Twitter. it really is funny, isn't it? Twitter. I would say about Geiger, the question I put out was, do you think, genuine question here, do you think FIFA will reward Geiger for this performance? And of course, on Twitter, where nuance doesn't exist, people took that as me saying the Americans done awesome, and all of these non-Americans are saying this American sucks. And my point rather was,
I feel like a lot of Americans think Geiger sucks.
We see him in MLS all the time. I think the question is, will FIFA reward him? Because he has been rewarded so far in this tournament. Whether you think Geiger has done a good job or a bad job, FIFA likes what he's done. That's how he got this game, because people knew this was a big game. FIFA knew this was a big game, and they gave it to him. Now, I would have said that in the group stage game, I'm trying to remember which one it was that he worked, he missed a penalty.
He did Germany-Korea, and he did... Oh, I don't remember the first one he did.
Yeah, it was the first one. That he missed a penalty. And yet he was rewarded, and then he was rewarded again with this game, England-Colombia. And a lot of folks, I personally thought he lost control of this game. And then it becomes a question of, well, okay, if you say that, what should he have done? What would have been better? And I don't think there was necessarily a sending off to be done, but there was a sense of he allowed the game to sort of get chaotic. Correct?
So, yeah, I mean, this is one of those things where if you're there, you're going to just have a different sense of the feel of a game, right? I'm not watching on TV. I don't get you know how it is in the press tribune at a World Cup. You get like 2 or 3 seconds of replays, and that's it, right? You're not getting the commentary. You're not getting Dr. Joe. You're sort of there in the raw watching the game, and it didn't look like the headbutt was even a real headbutt to me. I mean, I know everyone has a strong opinion, but to seeing it live, seeing it quick, I understood why he didn't want to send someone off. I think the impression I got sitting there was that he didn't want to send anyone off. He didn't want to be the story. And by trying not to be the story, he accidentally kind of became the story, right? He did a ton of communicating. I'm sure anyone who was watching on TV must have seen this, right? I mean, there were so much jostling and tugging and shoving and just general jackassery on every single set piece and free kick and corner and stoppage. And he tried, it seemed to me, to get in guys' faces and to talk to them and to communicate with them and try to sort of lay down the ground rules of what he was looking for. And I guess that didn't work, according to people. I guess that was the wrong tack. Maybe he should have started, like, you know, Three Stooges slapping guys and throwing out red cards, and maybe we could have finished the game as like a 5-on-5 futsal game. Like, I don't know what people wanted him to do, but it seemed to me like he was trying to take control by communicating with the players instead of just like sending them to the showers. And so, like I said, maybe his effort to not be the story kind of made him the story. So, you know, will FIFA reward him? I mean, it's like if, let's say every referee in the round of 16 has like the greatest game he's ever had in his career, 8 of them are still going home, right? So you could have a good game and not necessarily get another one simply because of attrition and the nature of the tournament. So I don't know. I guess I don't really care. I don't think he was the story tonight. I think England played better for the majority of the 120 minutes, and I think they deserve to move on based on that. And I'm not going to think about Geiger again, to be honest.
He may come back.
He may.
Yeah, I guess I just find it interesting how many extreme responses, pro and con, came in on Geiger, including one from Tim Cahill watching in New Jersey somewhere.
What did Tim Cahill have to say?
He thought that Geiger actually had handled it pretty well. And then I have all these other people saying, this guy's the worst ever, he's out of his depth, blah, blah, blah. And I just find it, like, I think anytime you get totally extreme opposite responses, then that means that's probably a legitimate question to have asked. And so, you know, we'll find out if Geiger gets another assignment or not, whether FIFA's going to reward him. He did call a penalty on grappling in the box, which we haven't seen many referees do, which I think might actually increase his chances of getting a call back from FIFA, because I think they sort of like it when refs have the guts to make that call.
Peckerman said something after the game, and again, it's via translation. My Spanish isn't good enough to kind of get nuances, and so I was doing my best to listen to him and to the translator and try to mash the two together. But he said sort of, you know, we knew this game was going to be this way, and you know, an English reporter actually said to him, like, you know, there are a lot of people from England right now, you know, based on comments, who are really upset with your team, they're upset with Colombia and the way Colombia handled the game and some of the gamesmanship and some of the grabbing and the arguing and stuff. And so, you know, Geiger didn't come up as much as sort of like questions about the two teams' approach and Colombia's approach. Gareth Southgate mentioned it as well after the game. And Peckerman said, you know, this is the way football is, and it's a shame. It distracts from the game. We expected the game to be this way. You know, there were, the way he said it, you know, there were players trying to get calls, players trying to you know, operate on different levels and you know, make plays about more than just the football, and why can't we get back to the football and make it about the football. So he was talking about like an overall environment and approach, and it's clear he wasn't happy with Geiger. But then again, as obviously a lot of people seem to believe, he's also lucky he wasn't playing, you know, with 10 men for the vast majority of the game. So both teams had calls that went for him and against him, and it's probably one of those things that evened out. And like I said, people can have opinions about whether Geiger had control or lost control or tried to keep control the wrong way. But sometimes players just don't want to be controlled. Sometimes players are just going to like act like kindergartners, and that's just the way it's going to be.
I do love the term shithousery, by the way. And as you know, I don't swear too often on this show, but it's a great word. My favorite moment of shithousery tonight was when that interminable, like, 5 minute period between the call of the penalty.
Yes.
And
yes,
the actual taking.
We were sitting there clocking it. Yeah, it was crazy.
And the actual taking of the penalty when the camera caught a Colombian player sort of looking away, but also like trying to deface the penalty spot with his foot.
Yes, yes. Someone, I mean, we were on the other end of the field, the media, the part of the media seating where I was. It was cool because it was on the end of the field when they did the penalties, but it was on the opposite end of the field from Kane's penalty. And someone down the row a little bit noticed that and said, "Yeah, they were trying to mess with the penalty spot." We kind of all had a laugh. It was kind of interesting and weird and it was strange that James and a couple there was another player who I'm not sure that I recognized and a couple of team officials that were sitting right in the front row of the stands. I mean, I could have hit him with a beer, you know, for where I was staying, you know, for where I was sitting. I mean, he was really close, and he was, you know, he was watching his team in a World Cup second round game, and just the emotions, and then after the 90 minutes, he actually walked onto the field and you know, sort of climbed down from out of the stands and walked down on the field and came back. But that was just like an interesting wrinkle to sort of. I mean, you expect him to be, if he's not on the bench, if he's not in uniform, you expect him to be in a suite or, I don't know, not sitting, you know, 10 feet in front of you. So that was really kind of an odd thing that I hadn't experienced at a World Cup game before.
Yeah. Well, all right, man. It's almost 4 a.m. Moscow time, so I think
Go to bed. And
you and I should probably call it a night, but let's do it again tomorrow.
All right, dude. I'll talk to you then.
Big thanks to Brian Strauss. Next up is my interview with Tony Meola. So let's bring in our interview guest for the day. He's Tony Meola, a Fox Sports, former U.S. men's national team and MLS legend. Tony, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, man. I'm glad I had the time to get here and do it.
We're here at the Fox lot. You've probably seen it from Red Square. We're going to be doing the World Cup Tonight show tonight. But obviously, Tony, you've been all over this country calling games. And congratulations just on a terrific job. I've watched every game in this tournament
thanks.
Really enjoyed listening to you.
Yeah, you know what? It's a huge thrill for me. Clearly, I'm the, you know, one of the rookies here and kind of figuring it out. And they paired me up with a guy that in JP Della Camera that if you're going to learn from anybody in this business, it's him. So for, close to a year prior to that, I'd been working games with JP. And I think it kind of developed into, hey, we think these guys work well together and can work well together. And through that, like anything else, this isn't the business that I thought I would be in. It's not, you never know what you're going to be in once you're done playing. And I just kept learning and working with him and asking questions, and he's been great. So I can't imagine that there, for me personally, there's anyone better that if I'm going to do this for the first time, that I could do it with. And then, of course, we've had some good games along the way, right? We started with the opener, and no one knew what was going to happen with Russia.
Right.
And they, you know, laid a whooping on Saudi Arabia. And kind of for us at Fox, and you included, and everyone, that kind of kicked the tournament off for us, right? Because if they get a bad result in that one, maybe we would have gotten more sleep in our hotel. But that's really the difference. And then it just, you know, the tournament, I know we'll get into it, but, man, is it spoken for itself. It's just been incredible.
Yeah, craziest World Cup I've ever covered. And before we get into some specifics on your thoughts on games and teams, I was just curious to ask. I know you host a 2-hour show on Sirius XM very frequently at this point, and I'm wondering, now that you've done that for quite a while, has that had an impact on you as a broadcaster?
Yeah, no doubt. It's like anything else, reps, and I don't know, this is still all uncomfortable to me. It really is. You know, it's not in my comfort zone. But the best advice I've gotten from everyone, from David Neal to my agent 4.5 years ago, just be yourself. Yeah. You know, and it sounds like a really easy thing to do, like just tell someone to be themselves. And then all of a sudden the camera goes on, you got producers talking to you, and in this case we're in a stadium and it's loud and you can't hear anything and you got a million things going through your mind. Meanwhile, you've just studied for 6 months, 19 different teams.
Wow.
So you got a lot of things running through your mind. So because that's not how I grew up, it's hard for me to be myself. It's hard. I still feel most comfortable when I have grass under my feet. That's my comfort zone. Everyone has it. But I do think that I've learned a lot along the way, and I think that's important. The radio, because you're asking questions on the radio all the time, or you're taking questions all the time and you're answering, I think what it helped me do was think critically.
Yeah.
So when I'm watching a game, I'm watching it different because even while I'm broadcasting, I'm constantly asking myself, what's happening here? What can happen here? What's happened that didn't go right? What's happened that's gone wrong? So I'm constantly asking myself in my head, you know, these questions so maybe I can come up with something to give the viewer – you know, something else to look at that maybe they wouldn't have looked at before.
And that's a hugely different skill than playing the game.
Oh, yeah. I said to JP, I don't know, about halfway through this thing, we were in an airport, you know, we're in economy class, we're like 100th in line. I'm like, I turned to JP, I go, man, JP, it was so much easier being a player. Like you walk in and you get on the plane and that's it. But yeah, no, it's completely different because for me, playing like most athletes is just instinctive. You know,
right.
I didn't really think. My father, it's a funny saying I use all the time with my kids now, but when I would come home from a game, you know, my dad played a little bit in Italy before he had to move to America, but just loved the game, gave me the love of the game. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd come after a game, he'd say, well, what happened on this play? And I said, well, you know, the guy went over here, and I thought that, he goes, stop. He goes, don't think, you're not equipped. That's what he told me. This is a saying, and I use it with my kids all the time. Don't think you're not equipped. And, you know, it's a simple, kind of dumb little saying,
right.
But when you think about it, athletes don't really think. They just do, you know. And for me, like, this is thinking all the time.
Sure.
I'm thinking. I am getting a little bit more comfortable with it, but if I'm being honest with you, it's not the most comfortable thing for me.
Interesting. So let's talk about the tournament. We're recording this right before Columbia-England. It's going to come out right after Columbia-England, so we don't know what's going to happen in that game yet. But as of now, there are 9 teams left in this tournament and some teams that we expected to be here that are not here. Of the quarterfinals that we've got set up here, what goes in your mind when you see those matchups?
Well, what I see is a bunch of different styles of play, right?
Yeah.
You can go right down the list. France, who just kind of exploded, and we know what Mbappe did. We did that game.
Mm-hmm.
You saw a star being created in front of your eyes. The potential, you know, for 10 years it's been Ronaldo and Messi as Ballon d'Or winners. This guy could be another guy that someday takes 3 in a row.
Yeah.
You know, takes 3 out of 5 years maybe.
Right.
One of those types of players. And they have a style, which was I think when we looked at France, we were all just trying to figure out when they were going to put it together. So many great individuals and couldn't put it together until recently. Uruguay, the history of Uruguay, they win 2-1, but they're a 1-0 team, right? They're
right.
Really, really comfortable. They're still a 4-4-2 team and 4-2-3-1, but very, very conventional in the way they do things. Oscar Tavares has been there for, I think, 16 years
That's
now.
Amazing.
And they still believe in him. Where does that happen anywhere? So he's like an institution there, and they love doing it the way that they do. Spain, you know, we saw Russia, if we had a bunker team this tournament, it was that game. It was that team. They needed to, because what happened against Uruguay in the third game for Russia, that was the best team they played. They tried to play, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
So we saw another style there. Croatia, Denmark, that was just a classic of two teams that are very, very that were very good on the night. Goalkeeping was outstanding. Which
that was a goalkeeper's night.
Yeah,
Subasic,
it was so much. Yeah, they were great. Subasic, you know, all the talk is Schmeichel because he saved the penalty kick, and it was Luka Modric, my favorite player, one of my two favorite players in the world. It's Iniesta and Modric are my two favorite players. They've been for years. And it was a matter of one penalty kick save, and that made the difference in that game. Just a classic. Mexico was the other story, you know. they tried to play against Brazil, and credit them, as did in the night game Japan, which was a thriller of a game, something we hadn't seen, I think, since 1970, right? A team come from 2-0 down to win. But those were all four teams yesterday that tried to play.
Yeah.
And they didn't hold back, and credit to Japan. What got them to 2-0 was probably what got them to lose 3-2 right. in the end. So what I've seen is all different styles. Today we kind of knew what we were going to get this afternoon from Sweden and Switzerland. It's two teams that don't change the way they play. When the U.S. didn't make it, the other team I was rooting for obviously was Italy, right? Mm-hmm. And everyone said, oh, we lost to a really poor Sweden team. I said, no. The one thing about Sweden, and the toughest thing for a team, and you know you've covered it forever, teams that don't have identities, right? Teams that don't know who they are.
Right.
Some have good players, but they don't know who they are. Sweden knows who they are, right? And it's something that we'll talk about tonight on World Cup tonight. They know their bread and butter is defending in packs in a zone and getting out of the break and free kicks and all of those things. So, you know, everyone has to have that identity at this point. But I got to tell you, I like to think since 1982, I've watched every World Cup game. Mm-hmm. I've seen every World Cup goal. I can't remember a better World Cup than this one.
Right.
I really can't.
Yeah. I mean, and also, too, with Sweden, I feel like this is a team that kept not just Italy out, but also the Netherlands out in the group.
Yeah.
In UEFA qualifying. And that reminds me a little bit of what when we've seen good U.S. teams. That identity-wise, that hard to play against, defend well, maybe have one guy who might be a little special creatively, but isn't going to overwhelm you with necessarily entertaining play, but gets it
right.
done.
Well, and that would be the other thing. This is a team competition, right? You got to be a group. Brazil's a pretty tight group,
yeah.
And they're really well-balanced. Belgium has a superstar or two in their team, but they're really well balanced all around the field. So when you look at it, it's really Messi trying to do it by himself, Ronaldo trying to, and not that they're trying to do it by themselves. The teams are so dependent on one guy. It just hasn't worked. Spain, I thought, was a little bit different. They just ran into a team that I thought they played well. They put over 1,000 passes together. It never happened in a World Cup game. They just ran into a brick wall. They couldn't figure out a way against a team that was playing for penalty kicks.
I was disappointed with Spain, and you and I both had Spain winning this tournament.
Yep.
I was disappointed with their lack of movement. There's a lot of passing. There wasn't a lot of moving. I was disappointed with just a little bit of lack of imagination to really try and penetrate and to work with Diego Costa up top and get him touches on the ball. It just didn't happen very often. There weren't that many chances.
There really were.
For Spain.
You're right. And there were so. I thought at some point Spain wasn't going to press. They were going to let Russia come. Let them have the ball and come at some point to open up space behind.
Yeah.
Because all it was, any player will tell you and any coach will tell you, you do that drill almost every – you do it twice a week in training where you've got six or eight defenders that are really at the top of the box and you put 10 attacking players and rarely do you score a goal. It's amazing to me. You rarely score a goal. It's about moving. A lot of times it's about defensive work, but oftentimes it's about you work on the attack. One day you work on the attacking side, one day the defending side, and rarely do you get goals. And that's what it looked like the other night to me, where there was just no space to go. There weren't shots from distance where maybe you pull a team out a little bit.
Right.
Maybe they got to come. There was none of that. You know, and Spain is not a team – they really haven't been because they've been so sort of beautiful to watch. They're not a team that lives and dies by restarts, you know, pumping a ball in a box and getting knocked. It's not really their way of doing it. So, yeah, I'm with you. I was a little bit disappointed with a lack of imagination. I don't think there was any lack of emotion because you saw the reaction after. They just had no answers in the game.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. I do think it was interesting to me, whereas Hierro, the Spanish coach who just came in right before the tournament, didn't seem to have a plan B, at least a real change that he threw out. It seemed very conservative, even the idea of having Busquets and Koke in the central midfield.
Yeah, that was a surprise.
But also, when you compare that to Roberto Martinez in Belgium and what he did when they went down 2-0, now he was forced into this, obviously, but there really was a plan B that was very different to bring on Fellaini, to bring on Chadli, and it worked, you know. And,
yeah.
And you can certainly criticize Martinez for maybe not getting it right with the starting lineup, but I think some coaches, including Hierro, don't ever really acknowledge until it's too late that they got it wrong.
Yeah, there's I say no problem. There's a slight problem when you get the starting lineup wrong in a World Cup.
Sure.
But there's a bigger problem, as you mentioned, when you don't make the change, right? And it was clear. There are two things stuck out to me in last night's game. I tried to bring them up. Belgium defensively had no answers for wide play. Mm-hmm. Their three center backs stayed connected really tight, and so Japan found all their success, you know, in those wide areas. And then on the other side, Belgium was getting a lot of crosses in the box, but only one player. And Lukaku by himself was causing that group problems. Right now you add Fellaini into the mix. Now it's a whole different story.
Right.
And when he went in, I the first thing I said, well, he'll go in. He didn't take out – I thought he took out Dries Mertens.
Right.
And I thought, okay, that would move Kevin De Bruyne up and he would sit deeper. But no, he went for it. He figured out that, okay, we're getting balls in the box. Fellaini's the kind of guy. And then Nasser Chadli just changed the game on the left-hand side of the field, which they weren't getting from Carrasco. So, it's a masterstroke, right, by Martinez, because you get judged as a manager on the changes that you make.
We'll see if he makes those masterstroke changes before the 90 minutes starts against Brazil. I feel like he can't afford to get behind against
this team,
Brazil.
Yeah.
And I do wonder if that means that we might see a Moussa Dembele, if we might see Fellaini from the start and maybe not Carrasco, for instance. But if they're going to make those changes, they're going to have to make a total formation change.
And it hasn't been. They've been three in the back. That 3-4-2-1 that we saw with Chelsea when they won under Conte the championship. We've seen it at Juventus. I don't know at this point. Keep in mind, he's I think 23 games now. He hasn't lost in 23. The only game he's lost was the first game that he was manager in when he got to Belgium. And it's hard to change regardless of who you play. It's not like they've been playing, you know, schleps over the last 24 games, you know. So. Yeah, but the wide area, he's got to figure that part out for me, because, you know, Brazil, if Marcelo does come back, you know, Fagner, who knows who's going to play on the right-hand side. But anyway, they'll have space to play. It'll be difficult for them.
It's pretty amazing how deep Brazil is at the fullback position. So they lost Dani Alves, then they lost Danilo right back.
Yeah.
And Fagner's been fine. He's been solid.
Yeah.
And then
he's
obviously
a lot faster than I thought. I can't say I've seen a lot of him over the years, but man, he's a lot faster than I thought. We watched him live, and we did the Brazil Serbia game, and just watching him live, his first step was explosive. And the first two times he ran, I was like, man, I didn't know that was in his bag, you know.
Right.
But it is.
Yeah, you know, you realize why he made this team, even if it was sort of a surprise that he made the 23. And then obviously Marcelo goes out, and Felipe Luis is not Marcelo, but he's been fine, I think.
Yeah, and you know, he does it in a little bit different way, but keep in mind how many goals he scored this year at the club level and how many important goals. Getting on the end, he actually scored like 6 goals inside the 6-yard box this year. From that same exact position, interpreted the same way that they play it, right? So it's not like a guy doesn't like to get forward.
Yeah.
You know, so he does. But he's not Marcelo on the attacking side. He also, you give something, you know, I don't know if you give it up, because I think Marcelo's a good 1v1 defender. He's just not always there to defend 1v1, right? Because he's venturing so far forward that you would think, okay. But, you know, Luis gives you something different tactically. But, yeah, they are deep. They're so good in the midfield. I think Casemiro is just a perfect complement for them. If they don't make him go sideline to sideline, you know, if he can defend in between the box, you know, the width of the box, 44 yards, it's a little bit easier than going sideline to sideline. But, man, they lull you into – they keep the ball and they lull you into, like, holy cow – you know, we're just throwing everybody forward, and then the space opens up. If you remember the Serbia game at halftime, Serbia took it to them for 20 minutes, and they looked really good, and that was their time to get the goal, and then they don't get it, and they end up losing.
So just to wrap up here, if you had to make a pick now, who would it be?
I'd have to go, now that Spain is out, I'd have to go Brazil right now because of how deep they are. By a little bit nervous. I probably, had Belgium cruised a little bit more last night, I probably would have said, you know what, they have a real chance. And they do have a chance. I mean, everyone here is, you know, this is not the World Cup to bet on, by the way. If you're a betting man, then forget it. But I probably would have said Belgium. And then the other I don't know if they're a sleeper or not, but can Croatia play two bad games in a row? Like, they had a bad game, yeah. Right? And can they go two in a row that are poor? I shouldn't say. I mean, Denmark didn't make it easy on them, right? It's you have to give credit to the other team, but they're a pretty talented team. I mean, how they ripped apart Argentina in that second half, they could be a sleeper.
Want to wrap up with Troy Aikman tweeted yesterday at you, which is a nice shout out. I think people have been commenting for a while that they think you guys sound exactly alike. Have you thought about that at all?
Well, I thought, to yourself, your voice sounds awful, right? Just that anyone exactly. who listens to themselves. But I heard this really from the first night. I didn't know where it came from. And then it just kind of picked up steam. And it's been like, I don't know, over 1,000 tweets now on that we sound alike. And I was waiting to tweet at Troy Aikman. What I tweeted at him last night, nice to meet you, sorry, was what I wanted to tweet. Then after the game, our stat guy, Jake Wisniewski, said, hey, Troy Aikman just tweeted about you. And so I guess we're going to try and do something together. I just said, look, I just hope he's not annoyed by the fact. It seems like he's watched the games and all that stuff. So it's pretty cool, I guess.
Good stuff. Well, Tony Miola, thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, pleasure. Thanks, Grant.
Thanks for listening to the Planet Football World Cup Daily Podcast. I'd like to thank Brian Strauss and Tony Miola, as well as everyone at Cadence 13 and Sports Illustrated who supports this podcast. Please, if you like the pod, tell your friends, subscribe, like, and review it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. It really does help the cause if you do, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only. Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.